your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome to Alchemy. Today, I'm joined by Jesse Shannon. Jesse is the Chief Growth Officer at Columbia Care. Jesse, great to have you on the show, bud.
Good to be here, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
For those tuning in right now, Columbia Care is one of the largest and most experienced multi-state operators in the medical cannabis industry. Columbia Care has licenses in over 18 jurisdictions in the U.S. And Jesse, it's an amazing crunch time right now as we're kind of dealing with COVID-19.
It's definitely an interesting time to connect. Obviously, the entire industry, and we're no different in that, has been going through an intense couple of weeks right now with all of our communities suffering from coronavirus and COVID-19. So we are doing the best that we can to keep things in continuity so that we can continue to serve our patients.
Yeah. And Jesse, you know, I think you guys recently put out some pretty interesting numbers. You know, in the last week alone, Columbia Care essentially was looking at data from the past week compared to the same period last year. And you guys were seeing crazy record numbers. I mean, up to 156% increases in certain instances. And, you know, in particular, some of the states that you guys are operating in, you know, Massachusetts, Ohio, California, Delaware, In some of these cases, seeing, you know, record weekly revenue, you know, in the last 12 months, like, I mean, can you talk about some of these figures and like, what is the reasoning for all that?
Yeah, no, it's obviously, as an organization, we've experienced some pretty incredible growth over the last 12 months. I think that was compounded over the last couple of weeks with everything that's been going on across the country and in our markets. I think what we saw was a lot of people that rely on integrating cannabis into their life for wellness obviously became incredibly nervous about the continuity there. There was a lot of people that were unsure whether or not dispensaries would be able to stay open, whether there would be an effect in supply. And so we saw people stocking up a bit to make sure that they had the medication that they would need during this period where, you know, a lot of sort of shelter-in-place orders are being issued. And you know, what we've seen is cannabis has been declared an essential service in, you know, pretty much all the states that we operate. And so I think that relaxed that kind of surge a bit. And we've seen a bit of a return to normality over the last week or so. But I think that it highlights the fact that people really count on cannabis as being something that is part of their, you know, I guess you could say wellness routine or part of their medicinal routine, depending on, you know, what sort of outcomes they're ultimately trying to affect. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we saw people stocking up a bit, I guess you could say, also trying to be responsible and knowing that they were going to have to shelter in place or socially distance moving forward, trying to limit the amount of return trips that they would need to the dispensary. But as we've implemented new curbside delivery and, you know, sort of home delivery services in the interim, we're seeing things, you know, change a bit and pick back up. But it was an interesting surge for sure over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of companies were experiencing similar, you know, capacity. I mean, good problems to have, but still, you know, kind of coming out of nowhere. You know, I wanted to ask you in particular, you know, Columbia Care is obviously very heavily focused on the medicinal market. And when you look at, you know, both sectors out there, right? So you look at medicinal, you look at recreational, like how do you guys think about the recreational side of the business, just as far as now and in the future?
Yeah, you know, we operate across markets that are adult use or recreational, as well as strictly medicinal states and medical programs. And I think that our sort of history where we began and our, you know, sort of mission, vision, and values of being someone that historically has been very medically focused and really kind of pushed the boundaries on some innovations on the medicinal side, working with, you know, universities and hospitals on clinical studies and things like that. I think that's what we're known for. As we continue to operate in these states with these adult use and recreational programs, I think we're starting to build a bit of a following. and a bit of a reputation for producing incredibly high quality flour and high quality goods in these markets. And so it's an interesting opportunity. We see it as a very interesting opportunity, especially within the health and wellness space, to, you know, logically move in as a trusted partner and seen as an expert when you've been doing things like hard pressed tablets and medicinal products that are meant at treating, you know, chronic neuropathy or helping cancer patients and things like that with their outcomes. It's a logical move to start moving into things that, you know, patients start reporting, helping with stuff like anxiety or pain and things like that. And obviously we have to be incredibly careful. We don't make any sort of superlative claims about the effects of these products. As we cannot, all we can do is really provide the feedback that we receive directly from our patients and our customers with what sort of outcomes they're seeing. And that's another interesting thing that we're seeing right now in the midst of coronavirus and everything that's happening in the world is it's an anxious time. And we know that a lot of our consumers report benefits for anxiety from the products. And so we do see a bit more stocking up there, if you will. But the adult use markets to us are really no different than the medical markets. It opens it up to a broader swath of people being able to integrate the products into their life and maybe not having to go to a doctor to be able to start to sort of experiment with these different products and see if they help to alleviate some of the things that they're dealing with. But we see all consumers in adult use recreational markets as well as medical being people that are ultimately striving for better health and wellness. And that's really where we position ourselves as a company.
Absolutely. And have you guys seen, at least in the last 2 weeks alone, as we've kind of working through this new way of living and this new crisis, have there been any specific products that you were kind of, you looked at and you're like, wow, that we didn't know there'd be such an increase in that area of our product base? Like, have you seen any specific instances, whether it's topicals or whether it's, you know, pre-rolled or anything like that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, look, most markets are fairly dominated by flower, right? We know that that is a huge seller and a product that is incredibly familiar to consumers. I think that what you start to see in more mature markets like California is you continue to see this gradual movement. And when you look at data providers like Headset, who's a partner of ours, or BDS, you really see that in those markets, people start to settle into concentrates and ingestibles and things like that with a little bit more frequency. And so that starts to get a larger market share. I think over the last couple of weeks, what we've seen is a lot more people trying those products and or buying them for the first time, testing them out. In many cases, they have a longer shelf life. So that could definitely have something to do with what we're seeing, people kind of preparing again for that uncertainty and making sure that they have something at home. But I also do think it's just a logical sort of maturity curve that we see with customer demand is that a lot of people who start out with flower because it's familiar and it's a very approachable form factor move into some of these other forms like concentrates and things of that nature, edibles, just easy ways to use on a daily basis. And again, longer shelf life, different effects and outcomes with those concentrations. So it's been interesting over the last couple of weeks.
Awesome. So I want to switch gears a little bit to a little bit about you. And, you know, Jesse, you and I go pretty far back and we come from the same world of technology, and which is actually kind of humorous in a way that we're both from the same world and the same cloth. And now here we are in the cannabis space. But, you know, I wanted to talk to you about your role over there and, you know, really how you guys are thinking about, you know, marketing from a technology perspective. So two questions, right? You know, first, I'd love to hear a little bit about your role over there. And then the second part, how are you thinking about technology as you're trying to get customers coming in to your facilities?
Yeah, I mean, big question. And it's funny, I know that you and I have had multiple conversations about this over, you know, the last several months as I entered the space and you ultimately entered into the space as well. And I think that what drew both of us here is that there actually are a lot of similarities and a lot of parallels coming from the world that we started in and then ending up here. And that is that this is a very young industry in the sense that there's still a lot of room for it to grow, but it's already large in scale It's large in user base, if you will, and it's transformative. And so working in this space over the last few years, even now and moving forward, you really get an opportunity to do some innovative things and to find some creative solutions for some problems where there really isn't a playbook that's written right now. And I think that's ultimately what leads us into thinking about what technology means to Columbia Care moving forward, broadly across the entire organization, but also definitely in the marketing program. And to us, coming from my background and from your background and people like us, there's actually been quite an interesting transition of a lot of people from our background into the space. And we're seeing that with founders of a lot of the technology companies, one of them being Philo and Chad. So it's been incredibly interesting to watch. But I think that what we're starting to see is a lot of people who have built businesses, technologies, and or were part of senior leadership teams at technologies that served the CPG, entertainment, technology industries at scale across things like programmatic, social, influencer, et cetera, come over into the space and try to bring as much of that infrastructure as they can, but they have to do so in a very creative way because we as marketers in this industry don't have access to the same channels. We face a lot of regulatory and compliance issues that keep us from being able to broadly message and kind of leverage a lot of the things that we're used to. And so for us, a lot of the creativity and a lot of the innovation moving forward and what will give us an advantage really falls back on technology and falls back on ways to leverage things that maybe already exist in a certain kind of form or fashion in other markets that we have not been able to find a way to make work in cannabis yet. And so that's a huge focus for us. And I think that our backgrounds uniquely lend us to knowing where some of those, you know, kind of, I won't say back doors, but side doors in to kind of creative innovation are, and maybe some areas that we could take advantage of in the short term. And so that's incredibly exciting. And so I think that that's the part to us is we know that we have to focus on pouring a foundation from a technology point of view and really tapping the right partners so that we have a level of scalability and extensibility to the technology itself that will allow us to activate the way that we know that we're going to need to as some more of these channels and data partnerships and things like that start to come online over the next 12 to 24 months.
Yeah. So I think you mentioned, compliance being a big, almost like a stumbling block, if you will. And I talk to a lot of brands and a lot of companies in the cannabis space that really have that same issue. And I think, when I hear these stories about, well, yeah, we're counting on our legal team to make sure we're compliant. But then the marketing and advertising is like, well, these are our ads. We need to make sure they're compliant too. So like, how are you guys thinking about that from an organization?
Oh man, compliance, bless them in our organization because they get it from every direction, right? Everything that we do ultimately runs through those organizations, which ultimately rolls all the way up to our general counsel and chief legal officer and down through that organization. And we have regulatory and compliance support across the entire marketing supply chain, as well as all the other operational sides of the business. It's incredibly difficult and it's incredibly fast paced for them. Things are constantly changing. As you guys know, and everyone in the space knows, there's always some sort of nuanced difference. I mean, if you are running a MSO in a multi-state operator, cannabis business in the US right now, you are operating a multinational business inside of the United States because every state operates with incredible nuance to the way that their Department of Health and their regulatory and compliance maps to, even just their neighbors that they share a border with. And so it's a big lift on the team. I can tell you, we are incredibly excited about what partners like Philo and others in the space are trying to do in building automation and helping to build technology that will ultimately allow us to be more nimble, to scale more quickly, to potentially be more real time with our messaging. Those are massive advancements that are just incredibly needed in the space. We are reliant on really talented people right now. And that obviously always comes with bandwidth restraints and prioritization. And so it's difficult. It's definitely a balancing act.
Totally. So from a marketing mix perspective, like when you're thinking about, you know, all of the different touch points, whether it's out of home, whether it's digital, like what are some of the key elements that you're thinking about, you know, going into 2020? Forget about COVID-19 for a second, but, you know, just kind of an overall marketing strategy. Like, how are you guys tackling the space?
Man, it's a big question. I think that we use a lot of the same channels most use in the space right now. We activate in out of home. We use programmatic display with partners. We use social. Obviously, we use social differently for our CBD offerings versus the organic channels that we operate for our THC business. We use print. We're exploring everything from podcast and radio. I mean, just anything that you can think of, we're obviously going to look into it. I think our goal is to reach high intenders in the top of the funnel, right? Like that's what we ultimately want to do. We know that the space is incredibly unique in the fact that there's a core addressable market that we know exists. And these are everyone from medicinal to health and wellness to just straight adult use. And that health and wellness bucket specifically is just constantly expanding. So one of the things that I think people are shocked by is when we say who our average consumer is in New York, for example. So in New York City, our average consumer is a 55-year-old female. Now, it's a medical program, but you're talking about a 55-year-old female average consumer with a high net worth, a high discretionary spend, and the basket sizes in New York City are double, if not triple, than most of the other markets that we operate. That's right. I mean, that's an incredibly interesting, not problem, but yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about. How do I communicate with that 55-year-old female in a meaningful way that helps to keep her feeling informed and in the loop on what we're doing as a company? But then switching gears, if I look at somewhere like, let's say Arizona, where our average consumer in Arizona, maybe 28 to 34-year-old male, that's an incredibly different voice. It's different channels that they're receiving information through. It's different ways that they want to be communicated to. And quite honestly, it's different products that they're buying. And so we test constantly. We test and iterate almost everything that we can. We build the best modeling possible on the back end to be able to monitor and measure all of our advertising and our media efforts cross-channel, and really try to understand what's moving the needle for us. And we try to do that with a hyper-local lens. We know that this is not a one-size-fits-all at a national level. You have to look at each market as its own sort of individual entity. And you have to approach that marketing mix in each one of those markets appropriately. And you have to be willing to adapt and to move money around and shift. And so there's a few areas that we stay incredibly consistent: digital spend, search, things like that. I mean, we are present everywhere that we operate, but there are other mediums, local sponsorships, experiential partnerships, out of home, print, where that strategy may vary on a market to market level.
Got it. Makes a lot of sense. And, you know, thinking about the future and thinking about marketing in particular, like, you know, is there something that you think will truly define the cannabis space from a marketing perspective? Like something new, something added to the mix? Obviously you can't do, you know, social, you can't advertise on Facebook or Instagram right now, but, you know, kind of looking at the sector, anything that you kind of can look at into a crystal ball and say, wow, it'd be really great if we had this.
You know, there's obviously a lot of things that I could look at and say, man, I wish we had it, or I think that this is where we're going. I would actually look at it almost a little bit differently. I'm definitely happy to give you sort of my prediction, but there's also something that I'm watching that I'm very interested to see what happens here. And the thing that I'm watching is that in CPG or entertainment or any other sort of marketing that we've looked at over the last few years, there is a consumer set, let's say in that core, you know, 34 to 55-year-old age group that has gone through multiple different iterations of the way that they consume advertising and information. And there's like this level of almost normality in that they've always been able to see commercials for, let's say, cars. So if you look at the automotive space, they've always been able to consume advertising on a mass channel like television, and then they logically move beyond that. So everything almost becomes an extension off of that for how they now interact with social or display or, you know, broadly video content, really interesting, innovative ways that automotives use digital to engage and interact with, you know, build your car or, you know, watch a video of its performance, whatever it may be. But everything is kind of an extension off of that medium in a sense. What we're going to see with cannabis is going to be the exact opposite. So you have an entire community of consumers that those roots are going to be planted in digital. So they are never going to be in a position where they're going to have been used to seeing advertising for their, you know, local dispensary or their cannabis company of choice or their brands of choice as that first mile having been on television, for example. Instead, it's going to be that they were reached first mile on anything from a billboard in Southern California to more than likely probably on mobile or broadly on digital. And so I think that watching how that develops and if that changes performance or content strategy is going to be very interesting to me. My prediction is that, and you know, coming from a social background, you know, I'm sure there's a little bit of bias here, but my prediction is definitely that what we're going to see is communities that are built at both a local and a national level around these brands and, you know, around these companies based on cause or based on form factor, whatever it may be. And they're going to be digital first. And they're going to be digital first communities. They're going to be digital first communication. They're going to really sort of exist and live in those spaces. And what's going to be interesting to see is what is the marketing mix? What does the allocation look like for cannabis companies in 5 years, let's say, if we're at a point of federalization and if all things are open and available, how many companies take a flyer on the Super Bowl ad? How many companies get into a normal rhythm of sort of, you know, the mass broadcast advertising? I do think we'll probably be in a different place with OTT integration and digital TV anyway at that point. But I think that's going to be a really interesting case study at some point. We'll look back on a massive consumer-facing industry, not just a brand, an industry that started, existed, and really lived in billboards and digital and print for the first, you know, decade of its existence. And how does that change that marketing mix and that consumer behavior moving forward?
A good insight, good future predictions. So Jesse, you've heard the show before, and you know, what we do is we talk a little bit about business and then we kind of end the show a little bit about you and we do this quick fire challenge.
Oh boy. It's okay.
Super easy. I'm just going to ask you a question and you're just going to, you know, give me an answer the first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be, Jeff.
What's your last thought before you went to bed last night?
Oh my goodness. I was so tired. I don't know if I could even remember. Unfortunately, I'm sure it had something to do with, are we going to see additional regulations placed on dispensaries due to shelter in place coronavirus?
Right. Exactly. When was the last time you actually took a nap?
2014.
That's right. You have a newborn. spring or fall?
Fall. Football, cool weather, SDC football, War Eagle.
Scalloping, right?
Scalloping. I can't.
Like, you're not very good.
Well, you know, it depends on whose waiters you borrow. If you borrow your buddy's waiters who's half your size, not a good fit for scalloping in cold water.
We'll have to send an update with an image from that day. We won't. What does your home office space look like right now?
So funny story, I don't have a home office space right now. We recently relocated down to Atlanta and had to kind of rush the relocation to make sure that we could get out of the city. And so right now I'm actually in my parents' living room, who graciously moved out of their house so that we could be here while our house is getting finished. They're in their RV right now. So I'm sitting at a kitchen table surrounded by toddler toy mayhem while he's taking a nap right now. So that's my current home office.
Sounds like a lot of fun. What's your preferred shirt color? I do know the answer.
It's black. It's incredible that you would bring this up. I wear the same thing every day. So I know. You know that it's black.
What was the last item that you purchased?
A black shirt.
Really? You didn't go to the store to buy food?
Oh, geez. Yeah. No, the last. Okay. Touche, Jeffrey. The last item that I bought would have been chicken breast and ground beef.
Nice. Something you learned about yourself during quarantine.
I'm not that interesting to talk to.
Sure you are. what's your favorite activity?
Oh, I would say favorite activity. I'm not going to give too cheesy of an answer here, but I do really enjoy the fall and kind of the group game watching, I think is something that I always really look forward to. So getting everybody together and watching an Auburn game is probably pretty high up there on the list.
War Eagles?
War Eagle.
So Jesse, for one, it was super fun to catch up with you and you know, reminisce a little bit about, you know, back in the days of technology, but, you know, great insight into what you guys are doing over at Columbia Care, and obviously really great insight as far as future predictions in the space. And, you know, can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, Jeff. And I just want to say how excited I am that obviously a big fan of your podcast in general, but now being able to bring this to our space and be able to have people kind of come on and talk about all the things that we're, you know, dealing with, struggling with, working on, trying to innovate, I just think is going to be a great opportunity for us as an industry.
Totally. Yeah. It's been so much fun. I mean, the space is just so broad and so just, you know, everything is so different. So it's great to get everybody's different perspectives, and I'm having a great time.
Good to hear it.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, Jeff.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.